On today's podcast, I'm going to be speaking with Stephanie Morgan and Scott Wilkinson, who are good friends. I hope you will all take away from this podcast what having one person in your life that believes you are drug sick, understands your needs when you are so ill, when even you don't believe you will make it through another day, will come in and help you like Stephanie did for Scott. She literally saved his life and brought him back from the pits of hell to a thriving life. Welcome, Stephanie and Scott. I'm so glad you guys are here because this is a story that has to be told. Stephanie, can you tell me how you two met and became friends?
We met in high school. We became friends in high school. And then after high school, we actually went on with our lives. He did his thing, I did mine. And we reconnected back on Facebook.
Oh, okay. Because I never even asked you two how you met when it first came to me. Okay. So, Scott, can you tell me what led you to being prescribed a benzodiazepine and an antidepressant, right? You were given both.
Yeah, initially it was just an antidepressant. I was in my mid-20s. Basically, I was living an unhealthy lifestyle, drinking, smoking, not eating well. And I started to experience panic attacks. And they were becoming more frequent and more severe. And I just went to my general practitioner at that point and explained to him what I was going through. And after about a 10-minute conversation, his answer was, here's a prescription for Effexor. This should take care of it. And basically, that turned into a 15-year span of being prescribed different and increasing doses of antidepressants. Mm-hmm. And then
they would treat your side effects, gabapentin.
Right. I started to develop side effects, restless leg syndrome, which they prescribed gabapentin for, or increased, if the anxiety started to come back or whatever, they would increase the dosage on the antidepressant or switch me over to a new one to see if that
And
that
at
worked.
Any point, now at what point does a benzodiazepine come into it? Were they given that to help with the side effects from the antidepressant?
That actually came after about 15 years of antidepressants, ending up with, at the end I was on gabapentin, I think 900 milligrams, in addition to Paxil, 50 milligrams of controlled release.
Two high blood pressure pills.
Two high blood pressure pills.
A side effect.
Right, along with all the side effects that went along with it. I actually happened to, at that point, hook up with Stephanie on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Through the course of our friendship over the next, I guess it was about a year or so, she came to realize that I was on a high level of antidepressants, and from talking to me and listening to the problems I had and stuff like that, she did her research and came back to me and said, I think the problem is the antidepressants,
right,
and the drugs that you're on that are creating all these side effects and all these problems that you're having. So we decided to wean me off of antidepressants.
And we weren't experts. Let us say that first. We weren't
right.
experts. So the weaning process that you're supposed to be on is supposed to be extremely slow.
Right.
We got a little cocky and did it a little quick because he wanted to be off faster.
Right. Now he's on Effexor and Paxil, or you're off the Effexor and on Paxil?
Just Paxil at that point, yeah.
So will you switch cold turkey from one to another?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did you feel?
He was messed up,
yeah,
really.
That's got to be...
I mean, yeah, through those years of changing dosages and switching and stuff, I look back and see, yeah, they had some side effects and some... But through that whole time, too, I was also drinking heavily,
mm-hmm.
Because we found out the antidepressants actually increased the urges for alcohol consumption. And so, basically my life was a mess through those years.
Right. And you're working, and you're on the road driving, and you're sick and highly medicated.
Yes,
highly
exactly.
Medicated. Yeah. He would tell me his brain, he thinks weird thoughts. He was struggling a lot his thought process. That's why we started looking into what was going on with him health-wise,
right.
and
right.
we found it.
Yeah.
We found it.
But what I was getting at was, you asked where the benzos came
right.
from. So after 8 months of reducing Paxil, tapering Paxil from 50 milligrams, I got all the way down to, I think it was around 8 milligrams in 11 months. Hadn't really felt any withdrawal effects. A little bit here and there.
Are you
over
still
that
drinking
course of
while
time.
You're weaning?
was I? Yeah.
He was off and on drinking.
Yeah, okay. I think during that period of time I wasn't. I had been before. But the side effects were minimal. The symptoms, the withdrawal symptoms were minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And then in November, basically, I got hit by a freight train of withdrawal symptoms.
It caught up.
Yes. And we, from research Stephanie did, she realized, you know, over the years of taking them, it builds up in your tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a long time for your body to actually get rid of that buildup. And so while I was weaning, I was reducing dose, but I was still, my body was still getting drugs from my tissue because it was so much was built up there. And we think that's why it happened that way.
Right. Happened one day.
Yeah. Having said that, so after about 2 or 3 weeks of increasing withdrawal symptoms, panic, despair, physical depersonalization, derealization. I was having eye problems. It was just growing and increasing and basically turning me into a basket case.
Severe inner restlessness.
Trying to deal with that, I ended up going to my doctor at the time with those symptoms to which he prescribed a benzodiazepine.
Okay, and so which one did he give you?
He gave me Xanax initially.
Okay, how much did they? Did he give
I think
you
it was initially it was half a milligram,
mm-hmm.
Once a day or up to 3 times a day.
Okay.
Didn't put a dent in any of the symptoms that I was having.
Yeah.
And you know, over the course of the next probably month or so, I ended up going back to that same doctor a number of times. He tried switching to Klonopin. That didn't work. Right.
And now, do you go with him, Stephanie, to the doctors?
I went with him, yes.
Okay. So now you've stepped in, you're going to the doctors mm-hmm. with him, and he just keeps prescribing. So you're dealing now with a new class of drug you weren't familiar with.
Exactly.
And as with the benzos, because, okay.
And meanwhile, everything's just getting worse day after day after day. Panic through the roof, anxiety, depression. Physical symptoms. I started, being delusional. Sometimes hallucinations. Sorry,
mm-hmm. That's okay. A host of
right. So then after
symptoms.
That, the Klonopin made things even worse. I felt horrible on the Klonopin. It was really didn't agree with me. Not that any
the
of them
flow
did.
Was moving. He would see
I ended
people.
Up, yeah. So then I ended up. He ended up switching me over to Ativan,
mm-hmm.
and slowly increased that up to the point where I was at 3 milligrams of Ativan a day. And
you still? Where are you on the Paxil?
Still weaned down on the Paxil. Yes, holding on the Paxil.
Okay.
And so then that basically became our battle with now benzos. I almost immediately was addicted to them, and very shortly after starting to take the Ativan, I was in tolerance.
Yeah, so the dependency and the tolerance get you right up front.
Right, so it needed an increased dose almost daily to even have an impact. And then, so recognizing all that, and Stephanie. doing her research... We started to look into, she started to look into, recognize the fact I had to get off them
mm-hmm.
because it was a bad move to go on them in the first place and things were just going to get worse.
Right.
She stepped in at that point and started to do her research on tapering.
Right. So where does I know he goes to rehab at some point. How does that even happen? Because you're researching and...
Well, we had to go to the hospital because he was completely freaking out at that point. He was taking too many benzos. He was in the withdrawal, and we went to the hospital. He's like, I have to go. So I took him to the hospital, and they admitted him into the rehab for an extended period of time.
And what did they do to you there?
Yeah,
it
really
a lot worse.
Yeah,
it really got to the point where I was just so desperate, feeling so bad that happened. What they did for me there was try to... take me off the remainder of the Paxil and put me on a different antidepressant. as well as wean me off the benzos at the same time.
So 5-4-3-2.
So you're off the antidepressant and on another one and off the benzo.
Completely.
And then on another antidepressant.
At this point, I made sure I went to be his healthcare proxy because I knew he was losing his mind. Mm. And I knew he wasn't going to be able to make the decisions that they were trying to convince him what he needed to do. There he was in this mental anguish and he couldn't even think for himself. So I stepped up.
That was smart.
And went to become his healthcare proxy. So I could make the decisions.
Good.
They did not like that at all.
Smart.
The doctors were mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she saw that, you know, I was so desperate. I would basically agree to anything point with the doctor. I was so desperate for some kind of relief from the constant symptoms. You know, I told her and a lot of people, I felt like I was in, you know, a fight or flight mode just 24 hours a day.
Right.
You know, cry wake up in a panic, go to sleep in a panic.
Right.
Cry for hours at a time.
So now, are you there every day with him while he's
in the hospital? I had to be. He could not be alone. I was afraid that he was going to kill himself.
Right.
That's how bad he was.
So now, how does he get out of the? You've taken control.
Right.
Somehow he now gets out of the rehab, and what does he come out on? How long did they keep him? Let's even see that. How long did they keep him?
It was less than a week. I think it was 4 days. Four or five days.
Yank you off. Put you on something else.
That's what the insurance company allowed.
Basically. I even went to the doctor and said, you cannot do this. I read about you cannot take an antidepressant, get rid of it, and add another one. And she kept trying to force me to say, let's go up on the dose of the new antidepressant. And I said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
He's coming
what
out.
What did they give him for the new antidepressant? Do you remember?
Cymbalta.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, and so now 4 days later, he's out.
He's out. No,
he's
no benzos.
He's non-functional. Yeah.
Well, didn't they reestablish the benzos?
No, not yet. This was the second time because you went in twice.
A lot of
and you filmed him.
I did.
You filmed him
at this point,
and I saw that.
He did go home, and he was benzo-free at this point. This is where the benzo trauma came in because after not having them and he was already addicted, his whole brain started to shut down. He was deduced down to a five-year-old. A little child, rocking back and forth. I was actually afraid to leave his house because he was fearful, and it was the saddest thing that I've ever seen in my entire life.
I saw in the film where you videoed him. Where
I took him home with me.
Yeah. Oh, you did? You
I
took
did.
Him home?
I took him home with me, and at this point, I wasn't a benzo expert. I didn't know much about them until I started continuing the research.
Right.
So I took him home. He got worse and worse. I'm thinking, he's going to die here. I'm going to go to jail. I didn't know what was going to happen to this poor guy. He completely shut down to where he was just hanging his head, catatonic, and I was frantic, so I'm constantly going online looking for more research. My mother had a stroke. Now, she's next door. This is another story. She's next door. She had a stroke. They had her on benzos. And you can't do that to a brain-injured person. But anyway, I went over there, and I'm not supposed to say this, but I did take one of hers because I wanted to see what would happen if I gave him one. I put it under his tongue. He came out of it just for a little while because we didn't have a prescription. And I knew right there that they shouldn't have took him off the way they did.
Right.
So I had to make an appointment with a psychiatrist to reestablish him on benzos so that we could wean him properly.
Okay, good. So then I think that's when you come to my house, right?
Right.
And that's a story in itself.
I know.
And we might even get emotional because when I even think of that day.
I was so desperate.
Yeah. Because to even see him walk in today, I mean, he was the shadow of a person.
Right.
I remember he sat across from me, you know, when you contacted me and you guys were coming, and he didn't speak. He had zero motion, and I kept saying to him, you don't believe that I was ever sick. And that was probably the only time he said no. And I said, someday you won't believe, you know, somebody else won't believe you were sick. And, I mean, look at you. I mean, it's amazing. So now, the process, what do you do now? So you know he's got to go back.
He has to go back to the psychiatrist. But in the meantime, you did end up back in the hospital.
Yeah, but after being out for, I think, less than a week, I was still such a desperate case. I actually spent one day where I just could not stop sobbing all day. Mm-hmm. And that resulted in back in the hospital.
Bring me to
back
the hospital,
in the emergency room. They sent me to another rehab facility.
I didn't know about the second one.
The second one. And they had no medication for him. They kept saying it's on order.
They didn't have any Cymbalta there. So I basically had the cold turkey that there. I would think I was there for three or 4 days.
Yeah.
And then released again and in worse shape than when I
So you came home on nothing. They still don't, no benzos, no Cymbalta. Now you're home on nothing and cold turkey from everything.
Everything. That's when the psychiatrist kicked in and we went there and I told him, do not say that you have suicidal tendencies.
Right.
Please. And let me do most of the talking. But, you know, he was able to talk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And she did reestablish him back on the benzos.
Right.
And an antidepressant.
Right. And then we had discussed going to a functional medicine doctor.
Right.
So you did that because he wasn't even eating, really.
No.
Never mind eating well. He wasn't even eating.
Yeah, I had lost a lot of weight. And I had actually had a period of, I think it was 9 days, where I couldn't even sleep. So I was in rough, you know, physical condition as well.
Right. Was that when you guys, so when you came to my house, that he had gone to the second rehab at that point?
Right. Oh. He was already reestablished on the benzos so that we could wean him properly.
Right. Okay. So what happens then? So now I know you take full control of everything. He's still working, right? He's still working.
I had
working.
To force
he's a
him
mess.
To work.
Yeah.
I had to bring him. He could not drive. I had to force him to go to work because I knew he would lose his job. And the trauma that happened at work all day long, I had to spend on the phone with him because he kept calling me. I'm afraid.
Right.
I'm in panic. I can't talk to people. I can't look at people. So I would encourage him to go take a walk. It was an area they could walk around his
mm-hmm.
work. And he would do that. And I would try to calm him down all day long.
Yeah.
It was a lot of work.
A lot of
it
work.
Really was. And I had to assure him all the time that you will be out, you will come out of this, you will be normal again, because he said, this is my life is over,
mm-hmm.
I'm never going to be normal again, I'm mentally ill. You know, he had all these delusions about himself, but every
right.
day, all day, I had to tell him, you will be okay, it takes time. And
so you would
I
drive
drilled
him to
it
work.
Into his head.
It's
him
basically,
to work.
He was,
crippled.
I know, remember, you would finally one day sent me a picture of him smiling. So we'll skip to all day. You drive him to work. You're on the phone with him all day. You'd pick him up, bring him home. And sometimes you had to go get him from work early because he just couldn't do it.
Right.
And
he'd
they
cry
were good.
And as soon as he got into the car, he'd cry the whole ride home.
Oh, I couldn't
sad.
Even have. I don't even know how you did it. I don't
and in
know.
The midst of that, too, she was always constantly researching and, you know.
Talking to people.
Right.
Yeah.
Looking
making
for.
Making your food.
Nutrition was a big thing that she
I
was
juiced
always,
for him a lot.
Yeah.
Always trying to give me, knowing that that was, you know, the one true thing that would help my body heal from it.
Right.
And help me through the actual trauma of the withdrawal and the tapering of the benzo.
Right. So you controlled his taper. Doctor let you control his taper. At this point,
she
I think
thought
they,
she was in control, but I was actually in control. She
yeah.
would send this prescription and I would basically be in control of the cut.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know. And yeah. I had to hold the bottle because he would be so traumatized at times, he would want to take more.
Right, of course,
because
he's
it was
suffering.
Rough. It was hard
yeah.
work.
Yeah. And then, so one of the questions, because you put so much time into helping him, I'm going to ask him first. Scott, how did this affect your family? Because I know you were married, you have a son, is it?
Yes.
So how were you treated then versus now?
Well, the weaning off of antidepressants and all that actually happened after my marriage had ended.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, though, you know, I can say certainly that the years I was on antidepressants and you know, dealing with substance abuse had basically, you know, destroyed my family.
Right. How is the relationship now with your son?
It's very good now.
Yeah.
Yes.
So he's seen
me through the entire thing because he was around when I was going through it, and you know, and he saw me in withdrawal, and you know, Stephanie talked to him a lot and explained
mm-hmm.
a lot to him, and so that he could understand that it wasn't, you know, his dad's just going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, he he's going through withdrawal from psychotropic meds, and, mm-hmm. and they're very dangerous things, and right. a lot of scary things can happen.
Yeah. Now, Stephanie, so you're his caretaker, but, you know, you have a family.
Right.
So how did, you've actually brought him home, you're feeding him, you're driving him to work, he's become a full-time job. How did your family handle
it? It affected my family a lot.
Yeah.
They were sad about it, but they also understood.
Mm-hmm.
I would talk to them on a regular basis, because when he was home, I would have to go over there a lot and spend a lot of time taking care of him,
mm-hmm.
and making sure he wasn't afraid. I would leave, come back, leave, come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were sad.
Yeah.
They were.
It was tough.
But angry? Were they angry about your time being away? Because I know my family.
They were.
Yeah. Was upset.
They
you
were
know,
angry.
I'd spent hours on the phone with people, which is why we're doing the podcast. And it took away from my own family.
So,
yet we know how important it is. We're saving a life.
That's
here.
What I kept saying.
Right.
I have to save his life. If he doesn't have me, he has no one.
Right.
And the condition he was in was torment, fear. I mean, horrendous.
Yeah, I lived that fear. You know, I can remember once saying to an author of a book, I said, I believe these pills are a pill of fear. It caused a fear in me I couldn't even have imagined.
That's what he said.
I couldn't leave my house. My kids had to babysit me. I mean, how crazy is
yes.
that, you know? So now, Scott, as I'm, you know, I can see you guys. He's so healthy looking. But down the line, I got a text from you. He's had a heart attack, and he had 3 stents put in. So unbeknownst to me, one of the things, I didn't know you smoke because you guys were on this healthy lifestyle. You didn't know. So tell us about that, because, again, Stephanie comes in. And, you know, my husband's had a heart attack. You know, they want to shove the drugs at you, and he really couldn't take them. They made him sick. So what happened there? So you must have been petrified to even be back in the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. It took me by surprise. You know, having Stephanie by my side was truly the difference through all that.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, we had opened the restaurant together. We were running the restaurant and been working on, you know, changing lifestyles and getting healthier. And one of the other things that Stephanie had done was research the high blood pressure medication that I was on and had been on for a long time. And I had actually, you know, we had decided that it would be best to come off that because as you know, from when you research those things, you find out they have a lot of side effects, and
mm-hmm.
they can, you know, do damage physically and mentally, and you know. So we decided the best thing was to come off of those. So then, post the heart attack, you know, my doctor had a list of medications that he wanted me to go on, and basically we just decided that we weren't going to do that because what we were going to do was treat stuff the way that it should be treated, you know, through nutrition and.
Mm-hmm.
And
she found
choices.
Different alternatives for each drug you were going to be given. She found an alternative for each one.
Right, a nutritional supplement or a dietary supplement.
And you quit smoking.
And I quit smoking, yes.
Yeah.
That was another addiction that I had struggled with, you know,
right.
my entire life.
Right.
That contributed to where I was when I first went on the antidepressants.
Right. So no meds today at all.
No meds
for
today.
Anything. And you feel healthy?
And his blood pressure went down. He was on
after
2 blood pressure pills.
Medicine.
When he came off them, his blood pressure went back to normal.
So with the blood pressure meds, when he got healthy, you know, after you did functional medicine and, you know, you work with your doctor and he's changed his diet, was he still on the blood pressure meds and then came off later? Because I didn't.
Yeah, we weaned off them during that process.
During that process. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent, excellent.
The doctor was very upset.
Yeah.
Telling us he was going to die.
Yeah.
If he wasn't on them.
So now you're both working today. So you were running a restaurant together, which was great. I went down, saw you in the restaurant, and but then you closed the restaurant. So, you know, where are you both working today, and what's the relationship today? Because he's healthy, but, you know, I mean, look at this. High school friends and Facebook.
I know.
And, you know, how so your health today is any side effect, any after effects?
No, long lasting effects.
Nothing.
No.
Your energy's good.
My
energy's people
good.
Think they can never recover from
happy.
The multiple.
That's
drugs.
And I can tell you, I certainly thought that for months and months, just
for years,
every day, all I thought was I would never come out of it. I would never feel
mm-hmm.
good again. I would never be healthy again. I would die feeling the way that
right.
I felt in the midst of the depression, because that's what these drugs do. The way they alter your brain chemicals, your thought process, all that. They're just so dangerous and so lethal to people.
Right. And I'd like people to know, because people think because of a cold turkey, they'll never recover. And granted, that is not the way anybody should ever have to come off these drugs. And we know people are still out there struggling, so I don't deny that either. Because, you know, I mean, there are after effects for some people. But for you, with all that got done to you, you know, and again, you had Stephanie. And the reason we're doing the show today, and we were all in agreement of this, is we want others to know how important it is to have somebody who believes you. And you know, you couldn't have fed yourself right. You know, she did it. She took over with the doctor. She took over with everything.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's definitely having somebody, a friend like Stephanie in your life. Excuse me.
Yeah. No.
It's definitely the difference between life and death.
It is,
I truly believe.
It is. I knew this would, we would probably all cry because, again, we, you know, you saw where he came from. I only saw him that once. And it is so emotional. I cried that day because I was looking at myself across the table, how I used to be. And you think you're never going to get there, you know?
And
so, Stephanie, for you, you know, you're like an angel. I wish we all had somebody like should clone you. How are you today? I mean, you're working, right? So
right.
You both have different jobs now. And
we did open a lawn care service in the summer months, in the spring, in the fall.
So what is like what to, oh, so do you do lawn
we
care?
Do fall,
oh, no, you
yep.
two are just so interconnected.
We do everything.
We've done a bunch of things. Since we sold the restaurant, we started a small handyman business and lawn care business. And basically, we're the best of friends, and we see each other every day, and we'll be. And, you know, we share the same passion for you know, wanting to help other people out there
right.
that have been through what we've been through.
Right. And it's funny because I had you guys on the list of people I wanted to do a podcast with when she calls me up, you know, last week, and
just
she said, you know,
hi.
I felt like God led me to, you know, we need to give back after all we've been through. I'm like, okay, it's time for the, do you want to do the podcast? So here you guys are. So if you could say anything to somebody who's considering tapering or who's in the throes of it, or they've been off and they're sick for years, you know, Stephanie, you're as the caretaker, what would you say to somebody so that if they could bring this to their family to listen to, you know, to convince them, please help me, what would you say?
I would say that they really need to ask their family to do the research to understand exactly what they're going through, because it's hard to explain yourself when you're in a condition like Scott was.
Right.
And, you know, and they just see this person that's on medication and they're kooky or...
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's not true. This is medicated induced mania, depression, anxiety.
Right.
They need help.
Right.
I absolutely would recommend family members to please have the patience, the compassion, the understanding to go through it with them.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot do it alone. He would have died if I didn't come.
He would have.
And I know this.
Oh,
for
I
sure.
know. He definitely. Yeah.
And I just couldn't leave him there. By himself. I just
right.
couldn't. I didn't have it in me.
Right.
And I just hope people can understand that they need to feel the same way.
Right. And Scott, what would you say? As the you know, we don't like to use the word addict. These are addictive drugs. So, you know, you were the one that was dependent on these drugs for years. You were, you know, iatrogenically ill. And for somebody who was really treated very poorly by the medical community, I mean, let's face it, it was horrible how you were treated. And what would you say to somebody who is even off or whatever and thinks they can't get better? Because I know the first day I met you, you just thought, no, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, no matter how bad you feel, how bad it gets, you know, or how much despair comes over you every day, you have to realize that you can heal
mm-hmm.
from these drugs and you can get over the withdrawal. You know, the brain takes a long time to heal. These are very... dangerous drugs that alter your brain chemicals and do a lot of damage to your brain, and it takes your brain a long time to heal. But just know that in time, if you persist
mm-hmm.
and, you know, think about nutrition and try to build yourself up in every way you can feel better again. You
right.
can get back to a healthy
right.
life.
Do you think you would still be sick today if Stephanie, or even alive, if Stephanie hadn't stepped in?
Yeah, I don't think that I would still be alive.
Yeah,
I think that the way that I felt on the antidepressants and combined with the drinking, as time went by, you know, I would say that I was, you know, potentially suicidal.
Yeah.
And if I had not killed myself just with substance abuse and the drugs, you
right.
know, maybe it would have led me to
right.
that.
And you have no cravings for alcohol today? None?
No.
No, a totally healthy lifestyle, you know? But we don't want anybody to think if they don't have somebody, too, but, you
right.
know, that you can't make it.
They
because
can make
what
it.
We're doing this for is to push through. You can make it. Yes, I would love to clone Stephanie and just mail her out to everybody. But, you know, that can't happen. Even myself. So even though I was married and I had people around me, I had to do my own, as tired and as sick as I was, I had to do my own cooking. So we want to encourage people, you know, one step at a time, you know, a salad, a juice, you know, if you, and as far as smoking, I know even in a lot of the groups, you don't want to quit everything at once. So again, I didn't know you smoked. But you want, that was something a lot of people, they say, don't even give that up right away. There's too many things. So you get forced into it later on. But, you know, a slow tapering later on off your cigarettes.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with people that are on multiple drugs. You know, if you're on an antidepressant and a benzo, you have to pick one to taper at a time.
Yeah.
Because they're so dangerous.
And it was unfortunate what happened to you. You didn't get to pick. It just got done to you. You know, but again, in the end, it was the benzo reinstated and then that slow taper. All right, well, anything else you guys want to add?
Well, I'd just like to say, too, having Stephanie in my life saved my life. But if people are out there going through this and feel they don't have a Stephanie in their life,
mm-hmm.
they should know that there's a lot of different resources out there that you can reach out to. There's
right.
forums and people just out there that have been through this and are willing to help
right.
and can help you get through.
Yeah, and I've always said, get your benzo friends. Like, you know, there are people that develop these very close relationships, and we're starting to have more meetup groups around that they're trying to start where, you know, there'll be people in the community that can help, and we've really got to work on establishing that. I mean, we're trying to do legislation here, and if that doesn't pass, we have to find other means to help people. So
maybe
absolutely.
Phone lines, you know, they could reach out and call somebody.
Yep.
Like
so,
us.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for being here today. I know you had to come up from the South Shore, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having us. All right, Garrett. So Stephanie and Scott just left, and the whole point of that show for me was to let people know that just having support in your life is important, right? Because I had great support here with all of you guys around me.
Yeah, I mean, I think with this one, we finally interviewed somebody that had they not had the outside person intervene, Scott wasn't going to make it. So in this case, it was a life-saving thing that he was able to find somebody that was able to look into what was going on with them, understand it, and help them through it, no matter what happened. Because I'm sure there were really bad days. I mean, they explained how rough it got, but I'm sure, you know, when you saw it in person, it was even worse.
Oh, I mean, it was. I mean, the first time I met him, I was in tears at the table, looking at him across, knowing that used to be me.
And how long have you known them?
So I met them, gosh. Well, I met Stephanie in church. You know, we used to go to the same church in Dedham, and back then, I was not well on the drugs, actually, back then. So that's over 20 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
You kids
so it's
were
been
little.
A long time.
Yeah. So I was still on the meds and still didn't know what was wrong with me. And I think even at church, people wondered what was wrong with me. And I...
Why do you say that? What do you think people saw?
I was becoming agoraphobic. I could only sit up at the back of the church. I couldn't have anybody behind me. I had to be like, I had to have that escape. And
mm-hmm.
and actually, I remember I was just starting to learn, and I had brought a book to the pastor. And then when Stephanie reached out to me on Facebook, and then she came by it with Scott. I mean, that was, she was learning. And I think she had said she read a blog and saw my name, and it's like, I know her. So, because nobody saw me for years, you know, when I became so agoraphobic and I was in the house. But I think what came out of this is we know from Cindy Samora's interview, you don't have to have a Stephanie, although wouldn't it be great to have Stephanie or places where you could go, where you are fed nutritionally well to get the nutrients in. So we don't want anybody to think you can't make it without somebody, right?
Right. And I think that brings us to the next post-show topic. And they brought up nutrition a lot. And I don't think it's something that we've talked a lot yet in any of the episodes.
Right.
And I think when we originally were trying to map out where we wanted the podcast to go, you know, diet and nutrition were going to be one of the first episodes. We haven't got to it yet. I think it should be, you know, within the next couple, because right. I think when we talk about recovering from this, it's always, you know, a couple of years. It's, you know, it's a lot of time, but I think people want to know, what can I do right now? And right. I think diet's the easiest thing.
Yeah, and we do have a nutritionist that listens to the podcast that's going to be coming on the show. So right. that's going to be coming hopefully in the next few weeks. But one of the things I want people to know, we are all individuals, and they did go to functional medicine like I did. I mean, it took 5 years before I went to functional medicine doctor because I still was not well, and I needed that individualized, you know, run the test. What was I lacking? What had the drugs done to me? And so after they had left, we discussed that they, you know, tests were run, what minerals he was low in, what vitamins he specifically was low in. They tailored his diet. That's why we don't always mention everything. They tailored his diet and his nutrition towards what those tests showed. So that was, I think, important.
Yeah. So that'll be a big yeah. episode when we finally get yeah. to it.
And interesting, because they talked about that he had psoriasis, and he no longer has that. They healed his gut. So I would not have known that I had gut issues, but that was one of my biggest problems. I had to heal the gut and slowly deal with my liver. He had to do the same thing. So I think when people aren't getting better years down the road, we have to look at, why aren't we healing? What has to be fixed in order to absorb the nutrients? Because I was not absorbing. One of my tests showed that I was malabsorbing. I was not absorbing any of the food I was eating. So with that, I think that's our post-show.
Yeah, I think that's it. And, you know, I think it's probably worth mentioning, too. I think every time that we've done one of these, as soon as we turn the mics off, people always think about other things that they want to say. Yeah. So I think it'll be interesting once Scott and Stephanie hear what they said during the podcast to do kind of a follow-up and, you know, complete the story. And the same thing with all the other people that we've
interviewed. Oh, yeah. They definitely, there's so much she immediately, you know, wanted to say and Scott wanted to say. So, you know, we can always have them back on, and we'd love to have them back on, because I just love seeing this friendship. And one of the things that they said before they left, they aren't just friends, they're family now. And he's invited to all of the things with her family, and their lives are intertwined now. And that's what one friend can do.
Yeah, to help you survive. It was an amazing story.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Thank you, Garrett.
Thank you.